Welcome to Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry. It's your family, it's your finances, and it's your future. Home and Family Finance is sponsored by the Defense Credit Union Council, serving those who serve our country, and by CUNA, the Credit Union National Association. Now, here's the host of Home and Family Finance, Paul Barry.
And I hope you're in a dry place. Not all of us are, but I certainly hope you are, wherever you are in these United States or wherever you are across the world. It is a beautiful day, despite some of the rain that we've had. But I hope it's not raining on any of your parades when it comes to your home, your family, and your finances. I ask you the question, and I will do again and again and again. Are you financially fit when it comes to your home, your family, and your finances? Are you? Someone turned that question on me the other day. They said, Paul, I hear you. What about you? Are you financially fit? Look, folks, I admit I'm not. I'm learning a few things. I have learned a few things. And I've made the same mistakes that you're likely to make or that you have already made about your home, your family, and your finances. And the reason we make these mistakes is that while some of us are financially literate to a certain degree, we just don't seem to know all that we need to know to make the right decisions. That's what the purpose of this program is. Are you financially fit? And what can we do to help you make sure that you get into a better position so that when you come to those tough decisions, and all of us will have them from time to time, you can make the right decision about your home, your family, and your finances. I'm always checking out all things that are public, all things that are new or published when it comes to financial literacy, because that's the basis of our program. And I recently came across something that really hits home, and I think you're going to enjoy learning and listening. This is a study that was commissioned out of the Missouri University. And it's about older adults. And the interesting part of this, the study, is called Old Age and the Decline in Financial Literacy. Let me say that again. Old Age and the Decline in Financial Literacy. Now, the reason that struck home with me is that, as you know, my mom, who is now 90, will be 94 in a few weeks, lived with me for a couple of years. She's now in a home at a care facility in Cleveland, Ohio. And Dinella is the light of my life and has been one of the most aggressive, independent women that I have ever known. And now, folks, she can hardly remember where she is. And it struck it's the stages of Alzheimer's, and I've watched it just decimate her capabilities. But a couple of years ago, she was still trying to do her finances. And she was struggling. She would sit there at the bed and go through the paperwork and try to understand and try to remember. And the frustration became anger. And the anger she would pour out of her because she couldn't do what she'd done all of her life. And we watched this and we would try to help her carefully. And I say it to you because there's a resentment. Your mom or dad will resent you if you don't do this the right way because they still think that they are capable of doing the things they have been doing all of their lives. And this study proves exactly that. It's a brilliant idea. What they did is and what they being Missouri and Texas Tech University and they polled 3,000, almost 4,000 people, individuals 60 and older, and found that they experienced increasing declines in financial literacy, their ability to understand and make good decisions about personal finances. They also found that the participants, at the same time, their self-confidence increased. Now, this is a deadly combination in terms of making you being able to jump in there. I don't want you in my business. I know how to take care of my business. I take care of your business when you didn't know who you were. And now you're telling me what I have to do? There are all kinds of things that you're going to confront. And as I remind all of us, that sooner or later, all of us, whether we want to or not, we become caregivers. We have to take care of our mothers, our fathers, our grandparents. Somebody is going to require that you become a caregiver. The beauty of this study, from my point of view, is that it really does help you understand what you need to do. And in just a minute here, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, We're going to introduce you to the person that's really kind of honchoing this and has been at the forefront of what they found out, and will explain to us in terms that we can understand. John Howell, professor of finance, Missouri Bankers Chair, and chair of the finance department at the University of Missouri. He's been at MU for 22 years, and now he has this study and the proof of what we may have suspected. We will now find out from him what are the things that they learned. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, here on the Radio America Network. Thanks for being with us. Stick around. I think you'll learn a thing or two, and I'm certainly glad to share it with you.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
And my guest is John Howell, Professor of Finance, Missouri Bankers Chair, and Chair of the Finance Department at the University of Missouri. He's been there 22 years with prior appointments at Louisiana State University and the University of Kansas. And he earned his undergraduate degree from Colorado College and his graduate degrees from Purdue University. So he's been around. He knows a thing or two. This study, Older Adults, which is an interesting look at older adults, because what they found out in this study is that there is a loss of financial of literacy, understanding, cognitive understanding of finances, and it is exacerbated by an attitude that I know what I'm doing, and that combination is when it comes to really making good decisions is not good. John, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure to be on. Thank you, Paul.
Why did you decide to do this? What was the cause here?
Well, there's several things that kind of come to mind. First of all, I have written in the past some research about retirement plans. And as your listeners are probably aware, there are fewer and fewer defined benefit program plans, which are sometimes called pensions, and more what are called defined contribution plans. And in a defined contribution plan, the individual has to take more responsibility for the investments, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of the responsibility is moving from institutions to individuals. And so the need for greater financial literacy is clearly warranted in that respect. So that's been a change that's been underway for, maybe 20 years or so. And there are very few, again, pension plans around anymore. A second factor that's well known that I was thinking about was that we have an aging population in the United States anyway. The baby boomers are kind of the pig and the snake, if you will. You know, the cohort moving through.
Yes.
And the oldest of the baby boomers began retiring in about 2008 or so, around that time. And I've seen a statistic that on average it's about 10,000 baby boomers that retire each day. So that's going to be continuing for quite a while, because the baby boomers are defined as roughly those born between 46 and 64.
Okay.
So that's many more years of that coming. So we have this aging population that has a greater responsibility for their own investments. And then on top of that, not surprisingly, it's older households that control most of the wealth in the United States. Not a vast majority, but households of about 60 years and older control a little bit over half of the wealth in the country.
Right,
so
right.
This makes it, kind of doubles the importance of thinking about what aging might do to our ability to handle our financial resources.
Older individuals tend to retain a strong sense of self-confidence, which adds to the problem, leading to significant mistakes when making financial decisions. In other words, they feel strongly that I know what I'm doing, and yet they're losing some of their abilities to really deal with finances. I mean, that's the heart of this, right?
Well, absolutely. It is the gap between that kind of perception or self-perception of their confidence and the demonstrable fall off in their financial literacy. Basically, we've got the self-confidence going up. It doesn't go up dramatically, but it keeps going up. and the fall off in cognitive, the cognitive decline is about 1% per year on average in, mm-hmm. in the study. And so that gap widens, and personally I think of the gap as being the is the biggest problem, is that there's an increasing disparity between what people think they can do and what their underlying abilities allow them to do.
And you toss into this mix, if you will, because sooner or later they should or will need to turn to someone to help them, is the fact that I'm your mom, you're your dad, or your grandparents. I know what I'm doing. And this opens the door, as you say, for more honest mistakes as well as fraud. When you realize that older adults are more susceptible to people taking advantage of this.
Absolutely. So there's a couple of things in there that, you know, I could address. One is, of course, that that elderly people are more susceptible to fraud, and I think it's because, again, of that gap. They remain, and in fact, increasingly so, confident in their abilities to discern things. And then they have this confidence, and then, but of course, their ability to assess a potential fraud, a Ponzi scheme, if you will, some sort of inappropriate investment, that ability has declined over time. And so a lot of con persons do prey on the elderly. And it's not limited. This is certainly part of financial fitness. It's not limited to financial products. We may have heard stories of people, you know, knocking on your door and saying your roof needs fixing, and then they go up there and do nothing and charge you several thousand dollars for it. Or the so there are lots of ways that the elderly are taken advantage of, not just in terms of financial affairs. So that's one thing that is a danger, and again, with our aging population, is an increasing danger. The other thing is, you know, we can think about the importance of these results from the point of view of caregivers, as you were saying, Paul, both in the introduction. Like, okay, and we have this difficult decision as caregivers. It's kind of the equivalent. When will we take away the car keys?
Okay, hold it right there, because I think it's so important to my audience, not only to the people that who may hear you and believe it, but to those who have to do something about it. Old age and the decline in financial literacy. My guest clearly knows what he's talking about. John Howell, professor of finance, Missouri Bankers Chair. We'll be right back with more. You're listening to Home and Family Finance on the Radio America Network. Are you financially fit? You're listening to Home and Family Finance on Radio America. Are you financially fit? I'm your host, Paul Berry, and we thank you for joining us. Our program sponsors are the Defense Credit Union Council and CUNA. We thank them for their continued support of the program dedicated to making all of us financially fit. The Defense Credit Union Council and its member credit unions believe that financial readiness equals mission readiness and supports the efforts of Military Saves in their dedication to improving the financial well-being of our troops. Military Saves is a year-round campaign that seeks to motivate, to support, and encourage military families to save money, to reduce debt, and to build wealth. As part of the Department of Defense's financial readiness campaign, Military Saves acts as a resource center for information on financial education and counseling. Check out its links to useful websites for military families where they can learn better money management and can find partners who can help military members achieve their financial goals. Military Saves, set a goal, make a plan, save automatically, and go to militarysaves.org for more information and take the Savers Pledge today. And as we always indicate, you don't have to be in the military to save. Everyone should be saving. Save at least 5% of what you earn every week, every month, and make sure that you do, because at the end of the year, at the end of that period, you'll be thankful that you put money away. It's just a very basic and real, real need, and you need to make sure that you're doing your part. Now, we're discussing, and I'm very pleased to have on the show John Howe, a professor of finance, Missouri Bankers Chair. They put together a study called Old Age and the Decline in Financial Literacy. What this means to you, and I mean to everyone out there, and I've said this to you before, I'll say it again, all of us, sooner or later, will be required to become caregivers. It's just a fact. You're going to have to take care of your mom, your dad, your grandparents, somebody, your wife, your husband. You're going to be a caregiver, and you have to know how to deal with this. One of the things I love about the study that that John has been involved in is the study points its attention to caregivers. And John, caregivers will play a very important part. Explain to us how this works.
Well, here's the issue, and that is at some point a person's financial literacy and cognitive abilities decline to the point where they simply should not be making the financial decisions. And this is a tough call then for their caregivers about when to take over control of the finances. I think you referred earlier, Paul, to the fact that the elderly people may resist this. They may be, they may feel that they still have the capability to
absolutely.
Do it.
They will resist it.
We've all maybe lived with that. If you haven't, you will.
That's right.
As you said, sooner or later we'll become caregivers and we will run into this resistance. And giving up control is a very, very difficult thing for people, especially if they've been reasonably successful at it over their lives. So this is a point. This is a point of the analogy I would draw is when do you take the car keys away from your parents when it's unsafe? And there's the same kind of decision and the same kind of difficulty in making that decision. Now the way I would go about that is I would ask the person, say your parents, whatever, to get an assessment, perhaps on an annual basis, of their financial capacities. I mean, it's not surprising to any of us that our kind of cognitive abilities do decline a bit over time, and a little bit of that's not such a bad thing. But at some point, again, we cross a threshold where the responsibility needs to be taken away from them. And if you can get your parent or your grandparent to agree to kind of an annual mental checkup as well as the annual physical checkup.
Mm-hmm.
Family doctors are trained to begin to look for signs of dementia, which is an extreme form of cognitive decline, of course, but and other sorts of things. And hopefully the parents will go along with that, especially if you establish it as an early habit before that cognitive decline has become significant.
And that's important, folks. Two things that you're hearing is, first of all, you got to get started early. You can't wait until the problem presents itself. And so, and your parent or your loved one is so far gone that they're not doing what you're talking about. You've got to do that. And then I love the idea. Most seniors do listen to their doctor. So have the doctor kind of check to see if, in fact, your loved one has still got it. Maybe missing it, and have them explain that, well, maybe they ought to deal with the son or daughter or whomever and let them help you kind of keep things under control. That's one way of getting there, because it's not going to be easy no matter how you try. And, John, I think the study points that out, does it not?
Yes, it does. That's a clear implication of the study. And I think, again, this kind of annual checkup idea is a really good one. And if people get into that habit, then that'll smooth the way, certainly, for a transition of responsibility.
John Hall is my guest, professor of finance, Missouri, Bankers Chair. We'll be right back with more. You're listening to Home and Family Finance. Older adults have a toxic combination. Know how to put the fire out. We'll be right back.
Helping you be safe, smart, and secure with your finances. Welcome back to Home and Family Finance with your host, Paul Berry.
We're talking about securing the finances of those you love, those in our family that grow older. And as they grow older, according to a study that we are sharing with you, it's a mixing decline of financial literacy with an increase in self-confidence. And let's say you're one of those people that's on the verge here, or you know that John, what can this person or persons do to make this transition easier for the ones that are going to have to help them?
Right. So first of all, as you said earlier, Paul, start early on this. Start when you've got most of your senses about you. And there's several things you can do. One is simply to be aware that an amount of cognitive decline is inevitable. And then if you couple that with the presumably you would have the desire to make it easier on your future caregivers, let's say your sons or daughters or whatever, and if you couple those, then what you really need to do is put your financial affairs in order in a very, very transparent way. And so I have a friend, for example, who has a list of all of his assets, all of his, and everything that he shares, not only with his wife, but he shares with his children. And so that there are no big surprises when the time comes to kind of transition out. And so that's one thing that, again, the elderly or the approaching elderly can do in advance. I would also comment that very often as someone gets older, the caregivers may not be financial experts themselves, and or they may simply be not have the time to do a lot of financial planning, in which case it does make sense for the financial investments of the elderly to be fairly what I will call automated.
Mm-hmm.
So these are things, for example, annuities. Now, annuities do have a bad name because some of them have very high expense ratios, but you can find ones with low expense ratios. And therefore, the payment is predictable. It's taken care of. It's guaranteed. Other sorts of more passive things are just widely diversified portfolios that don't involve trading in and out of securities. We don't really want elderly people to do that, and I'm not even sure we want younger people to be doing that either. So the transition might involve a soon-to-be elderly person providing this vision, not only a sense of what the current situation, the assets and liabilities,
right,
but also a vision of a kind of automated financial future.
And let's get the whole picture here. What you're suggesting is that, first of all, you've got to be willing to admit that, hey, I'm not as sharp as I used to be, which is a hard thing to do. Then you've got to get one of your family members or caregivers to get involved, understand what your finances are, and to help you. And then I think that where you're heading is that you might need an advisor, I mean a real financial advisor, to oversee both your finances and what's happening in this transition.
Spot on, Paul. You're exactly right. So then the trick becomes picking a good advisor. And a good advisor, there are a number of characteristics. One, first of all, to state the obvious, really has to have your best interests at heart. And second of all, I would encourage people to actively ask and explore how that advisor is compensated. Because some compensation schemes, they may make their money, for example, by selling investments that have high expense ratios,
mm-hmm,
that cut into the returns, or otherwise inappropriate for someone. So there's several ways to go about this. Certainly, asking around. You know, you may have friends whose parents already have a good advisor and they have a number of years with them and feel very good about them, But the caregivers as well as the soon-to-be elderly need to be aggressive about asking perhaps difficult questions about the compensation and how their performance up to that time and so forth. So yes, the advisor can very well play an important role, and choosing an advisor is extremely important as well.
And folks, by the way, if you look, you know where you are in terms of investments based on what you're doing or what you're not doing. So you know the possibilities here are that you can, with your parents or your loved one, you can learn together. You can make the suggestion. Look, you know, I don't know all there is to know about this, mom or dad or grandpa, but let's learn together. Let me find somebody. And by the way, folks, when you're looking for the advisor, make sure the advisor is a certified, and let me repeat that, a certified advisor, because they have a responsibility, a legal responsibility to do right by you. Now, there are all kind of advisors out there. When you start talking about help me with my money, boy, you'd be surprised how many folks think they can advise you. So don't go to somebody that's not certified and not trained, and go together with your loved one. Either you suggest it, the loved one, or the senior. Say, let's get this right. Let's get this right. And the other part that I love about what you're saying, John, is when you go for your medical checkup, go for your mental checkup and ask the doctor to advise you as to how you're doing. That's very important, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And again, family practice doctors and are more and more trained to begin to look for signs of cognitive problems, and they may well refer someone out to a specialist, but this is something that family doctors are starting to pay a great deal of attention to, again, because of the aging population here in the U.S.
So when you look at this, and an overall, I guess what I want to make sure that we leave our listeners with an understanding that it's never too early to be aware that you're headed in this direction. Now, how quickly you get there, you don't know. But if you have seniors in your home, I don't think it's ever too early to start at least kind of leaning in that direction, saying, hey, look, let's talk about what's going to happen here with you. What do you want to happen? I mean, you can't be the know-it-all. You've got to be somebody that's going to be a partner with your family, with your loved one, to get them to cooperate, right?
Absolutely. In fact, I love your phrase "learning together," because we've got the younger person, the older person, but what the younger person is learning will be helpful, you know, someday when the next generation has
yes.
to take care of them.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
That learning together phrase is critically important.
And that's why we're talking about this, folks. Look, don't wait till the last minute. Now what do I do? No. Start doing now. You are going to be a caregiver. Or are you going to find somebody that is going to look after your loved one? So you might as well start early so that you don't run into a crisis. This is Home and Family Finance on the Radio America Network. We'll be right back with John Howe.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry.
I want to tell you something. Mothers and fathers, grandparents, uncles, granduncles, it's difficult to broach the subject of finances with them, because most of us have all of our lives used finances. We talk about finances like this. Don't talk too much about it. Don't say, you know, it's all very quiet. No, it isn't quiet anymore. You've got to speak up and be willing to jump in there. My mother, when it came to talking about her finances, until I really ended up going in with her to see an attorney, she would talk nothing about it. I mean, for her will and everything. And then she said, well, you should know about this. I said, Mom, I should have known about this 20 years ago. My guest is John Howe, professor of finance, Missouri Bankers Chair. The study is on older adults, and it's very simply put, folks, they've studied to see what happens with our seniors or as people grow older. And two things happen here. Number one, they lose their capability to be as sharp as they used to be, number one. But at the same time, their self-confidence goes up, which means that they're very difficult to live with. John, this is not unique, is it?
No, this is, I suspect, although the respondents in the survey are all U.S. people, I suspect this is a worldwide phenomenon, at least in terms of the cognitive decline. So that's got to be a given here.
Yeah.
And what you say, you're talking about your mother there, Paul, these can be very difficult conversations.
Yeah.
They're particularly difficult to initiate. I think in the United States, people are probably more reluctant to talk about finances than almost any other subject. And so this is very difficult conversation to have, but as you emphasized, it's an absolutely critical conversation to have.
So we're
talking about financial fitness here.
Yeah.
There should be parallel conversations with physical fitness and so forth, but the focus here is on financial fitness.
And so
yes,
dive right into it. The point being is you've got to do it. There's no easy way to do it, but you've just got to start the conversation, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I think if we put the shoe on the other foot, if you put yourself in the shoes of the elderly person, they can make this a lot easier by initiating that conversation
right.
themselves.
Okay.
They can start talking to their children again early on, as we said. I would suggest, based on some other data that I've seen, you know, that maybe in the 50s is not too early to start with the transparency that we've already talked about, to start with these very frank and open conversations about their financial situation. And if the parent or grandparent can initiate that conversation, then it really, I think, makes it a lot easier. But on the other hand, if you're the kid, the son or daughter, and your parents are not starting that conversation, it's time for you to do it.
Yeah, and it won't be easy, and it may not click the first time, folks, but don't be deterred, because ultimately what you're doing is going to work for everybody and work to the best of everybody. Now, right now, John, folks are screaming at me. The study, Old Age and the Decline in Financial Literacy, where do I get information? How do I reach out to him? Is the study available to others?
Yes, the study is available, and we can certainly put it up on the website. The Facebook page of the University of Missouri's Trulask College of Business. Right there. In fact, I'm glad you raised that. If you just type in University of Missouri Trulask College of Business on Facebook, you will find a link to the actual quiz that we use in the study. And so people can test their own financial literacy against the, I think there's 16 questions there.
Wow.
And that's kind of a fun thing to do. And my contact information will be there. Also, we'll have the link to the quiz up on our Twitter feed. To be honest, I don't tweet, so I don't have a lot of information about that. But they're always welcome to contact me directly. And if you just type in University of Missouri Department of Finance, I should be easy to find on the website.
Okay.
And I'd be happy to respond to emails.
And let me give a shout out to your colleagues, Michael Fink and Sandra Houston from Texas Tech University. They surveyed more than the 3,800 folks 60 or older and found that they did, in fact, experience increasing declines in financial literacy. The researchers also found that the participants' self-confidence increased slightly. And to both Michael and to Sandra and to all the other people that worked with John on this, I can't say enough how much I appreciate you documenting what most of us think about, but we're not really sure about. But here it is in black and white, folks, and you can go there and let that be the foundation. You know, it's a great way. Get the study and then say to your mom or your dad or your loved one, hey, look what I've got something I want to read to you. All right? And do it that way. But you must initiate. Or if you're the senior, then call in the youngins and say, look, folks, mom and I or dad and I are getting older. We've got some investments we need to talk with you about. We want you to help us. And then don't forget to bring in your doctor who does it, because most folks are willing to listen to the doctor. So have the doctor do some tests to make sure that you're still as sharp as you think you are. John, all of that is helpful toward getting into the right place at the right time, isn't it?
Absolutely. And Paul, I'm glad you mentioned the doctor. Older people tend to be more they tend to defer to doctors more than younger people. And sometimes that's not a good thing, but in this setting, it could be a good thing. So I know my mother-in-law, for example, kind of takes as given anything her doctor tells her, and without questioning it. She's 90 or 91, I think, actually.
Isn't it interesting how they all have the same behaviors? You know, as we get older, we grow older, we lose a little bit of hair, we get a little pot belly, and we're difficult sometimes to get along with. It's just the way it is, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. But I'm glad you gave a shout-out to my co-authors, because this project certainly could not have been done without their immense contributions to it. So thank you for doing that.
Absolutely, and thank you. I really mean this, John. Thank you so much for having the strength and the courage to go ahead and say, look, let's look at this, and then to publish it so it's available to us. Come back and see us again soon, would you please?
We'll be happy to do that.
All right. John Howe, Professor for Finance, Missouri. Folks, good stuff. And you can find that study. Now, coming up next, where is this guy? Where is this Navy SEAL coming across country to make sure that you carry the load for Memorial Day? We'll be right back. Stay with us. Financially Fit with Paul Berry on the Radio America Network, Home and Family Finance right here. If you're a regular listener, you know that each week we've been joined by both Clint Bruce and Stephen Hawley. They are former Navy – I guess you're never a former Navy. They're Navy SEALs who are no longer active duty, but they are active on a great cause. Carry the Load is what they're doing right now. It goes back 6 years. Navy SEAL war veteran Clint Bruce was at a barbecue on Memorial Day 2010. He was thinking of his friends he lost in combat, but noticed others around him saw Memorial Day as a party or a day off from work. Do you feel that way? Be honest. Okay. It's okay, but do you ever really think of the purpose? Well, Clint did, and to honor his friends, he strapped on his backpack and began walking while thinking of the people who had sacrificed him and for others. An understanding older veteran stopped him and said, "Son, who are you carrying?" From then on, the idea of carry the load was born. In 2011, an inaugural event was held in Dallas with 500 participants, and now 30,000 people are taking part. Two treks took off, one from Seattle on April 27th, the other from May 1st in Boston, a 33-day, 6,600-mile relay to get to both ends to meet in Dallas. And joining me now, Clint Bruce, who's been starting out on the Seattle tour. Welcome to Home and Family Finance, Clint. How you doing?
I'm doing well. It's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having us.
Hey, man, we if you can do that, the least I can sit on my butt here and make sure that other people know what you're doing, that you guys are out there making that walk and making that trek. How far have you gotten so far?
We're in San Diego now. So we've made it all the way down the Western Seaboard, had some amazing times in Oregon. It's just so spectacular. It's been amazing to see people come out who you just see the bus or see us walking and pull over to ask what's happening, yeah. And literally they just park their cars and walk alongside us and tell us about the person they missed that they want us to know about. LA was remarkable. San Francisco, walking the Golden Gate Bridge was spectacular. And we'll be in San Diego, heading up to Las Vegas and then Phoenix and then on into Texas.
It's a phenomenal idea, one that deserves amplification. I know that you let people, what you're doing is raising money as you walk for a number of organizations, Building Homes for Heroes, Adaptive Training Foundation, Heroes of the Water, Snowball Express, Legacies Alive, Marine Corps Law Enforcement Foundation, many, many more. And how can people join in here? What do you want them to do?
I love it when people come out and walk. I love it when people come out and walk, come to the rally points and just visit with us. For me, that's probably the most important mission, is to raise awareness about Memorial Day and what it is and what it's supposed to be and how we're supposed to revere it and celebrate it. And also to extend that branch of recognition throughout the month of May to law enforcement, fire and rescue personnel. That's my favorite. Secondly, you can participate, donate, and volunteer. The very best thing to do is either go to a website or go to carrytheload.org. And just click around and find what makes the most sense for you, what's most available to you, and join this great mission. I mean, it's we've just seen extraordinary growth over the last 5 years, mostly because we try to be so accessible to whatever's available to you to do. I mean, we have 30-something rallies all across the United States this year, in addition to the two relays. So there's plenty of opportunities for someone to come out and tell us who they miss and who thought
absolutely
we were, so we can celebrate them appropriately.
A lot of people want to know where the route is and all of that. Tell us again where we can go to find out where you guys are, where you're going to be, and what we can do. Where do you go?
Yeah, if you go to carrytheload.org, there's a button for check where the East Coast and the West Coast relay is. You can simply click on those things, and they'll tell you exactly where we are. In addition, you can also go to our Facebook page. Our Facebook page is very active. You get updates from the road. Twitter, all the teams are posting on Twitter often. So, we try to be very aggressive on social media and very good on social media. But the website and the Facebook page, carrytheload.org, and Carry the Load on Facebook are the two probably best locations to get information.
My man, the relay consists of two separate routes, a 4,300-mile West Coast route and a 2,300-mile East Coast route. So wherever you are in the U.S., folks, wherever you may be listening to this, you can find out where these guys are, and you can jam up with them because they're going to meet in Dallas over Memorial Day weekend and a Memorial March. I suspect that's going to be quite a party there, Clint.
That's amazing. Like last year, we had about 16,000 people there on a Sunday of a three-day weekend in Dallas, Texas, and it wasn't particularly great weather, but we still just had that many people out there. And why that's so important to us as veterans is, historically, the numbers, about two-thirds and a little more of the participants in Carry the Load are great American citizens, not people who served. And I think when we see those numbers, when we see that acknowledgement of the sacrifice by the citizenship that we love and wanted to protect and serve, it reconciles a lot of the anger, and it smooths a lot of rough edges, because it's just a demonstration of how much what these men and women did mattered.
Clint Bruce, carry on. Thanks so much. Talk to you again next week. See where you are, okay?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
You bet, my man. Hey, folks, thanks for joining us here on Radio America. I'm Paul Berry. I'll be back next week, same time, same place. I'd look forward to seeing you here. And if you have a moment, carry the load. Carry the load as you will. We'll see you next week.